I'm going to be talking about morph today, and you know, just if you have questions at any time, feel free to ask. Okay, so for the talk today, what I'd like to do is I'd like to start out with talking about some history of OS fingerprinting. I'm not sure what the background is of everyone in this room. What is morph? What does it do? Why should you use it? Should you use it? I built morph on top of some different libraries, and I'd like to bring those up and talk about what I did with using those libraries. Now, when I was implementing morph, there was a lot of architecture considerations. I mean, do I want to do proxying, or do I want to do like loopback firewall or something like that? And that would be covered in that area. It wasn't really that easy to write morph, and I'd like to share with you the challenges of writing such a piece of software. Of course, the work with morph is not anywhere near to done. It's just started, and there's still a lot of stuff left to do. So the future of morph is, you know, there's a lot of stuff there too. And finally, of course, acknowledge the people who helped me out. Okay, is there a reason why we should defeat OS fingerprinting? How many people in this room have done pen tests or vulnerability assessments before? Okay, so about half of the people in here. So when you do that, you know that you start out by trying to figure out what your remote, you know, host is running, right? I mean, you want to know what kind of services they're running, what kind of OS they're running. And then from there on, you can then start building up your knowledge base of potentially what kind of things they might be vulnerable to. Well, target host OS obviously is very important. It's one of the most important pieces of doing reconnaissance about a host that you're going to attack. Tools like Nmap, Queso, Xprobe2, I know that the authors always say, you know, don't use this for bad things, and, you know, just do it for testing your own environment to make sure you know what's in your environment, that kind of thing. But the reality is that, you know, any attack would use tools like that to figure out what they're looking at. So the fact that OSs are honest about what they are, in most cases, is a bad thing for them. You know, so people might ask me something like, well, if you're going to try to hide your OS from a scanner, wouldn't that be something like security through obscurity? Is that not good? And I always say, well, I've been in a lot of environments where they do security through obscurity. There's a big difference between that and this obscurity. With that one, it's like, okay, I'm going to run this obsolete OS that's not patched just because I think very few people know about this OS. I don't think that's a good idea. Now, with this one, let's say you're pretty good about patching your servers when new patches come out. You're not totally clueless about maintaining security for your environment, but you just want something extra, like another layer that you can potentially use. And this is where morph might come in useful. So I'm not advocating security through obscurity in a bad way. Okay, so let's get to morph. What is it? It's a user land process that, you know, allows you to install, configure and install it on a certain host. And then you can select whether you want to be, you know, OpenBSD 3.3 or, you know, Windows 2000 Service Pack 4 or Linux 2.4 kernel. And the reason why I did OpenBSD 3.3 instead of like 3.5 or something is because Xprobe2, which was one of the tools that I was writing this against, only goes up to 3.3 in their fingerprints, so I thought it would be easier to test that way. That doesn't mean that I can't support other things later. Now, morph will handle inbound and outbound packets. figure out what to do with them. I mean, sometimes it receives a packet and it wants to pass it along to the OS. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it just wants to respond directly to the remote OS that sent the packet. Okay, so right now, Morph is able to be compiled and installed on Linux. It doesn't compile and install on OpenBSD or FreeBSD or NetBSD yet because I haven't finished that part yet. So when I do, and obviously I think one of the most important places for Morph to be able to compile and install on is Windows. I mean, because if I were a Windows admin, I'd just be like, I need something like that. You know, I need to pretend I'm something else. It is not production quality yet, so I am not telling you to take Morph and install it on your production servers. Please don't. I haven't tested it enough to recommend it for that. So if you've got a test research network that you want to run Morph on just for fun, because you like doing this area of research, first of all, I'd like to get to know you, because we could probably talk a lot about this area. And two, that would be great. I'd love to hear input from people running this for fun and saying, oh, this worked or this didn't work or something like that. Morph is BSD license. I'm a very strong believer of doing, you know, free as in freedom licensing. And in another probably week and a half or so, you will be able to download the source code for Morph from the following URL. Okay, like I mentioned earlier, Morph is built on a couple of libraries, and one of those is Packet Purgatory, which was written by Todd McDermott sitting over here. And Packet Purgatory acts as kind of a wedge between the OS and the network interface. So it makes my job so much easier with Morph. I mean, without Packet Purgatory, I'd probably have to write like 4,000 more lines of code. And my background is more in assembly programming, and 4,000 lines less of C code is good for me. Anyway, Packet Purgatory itself is built on libpcap and libdnet. And I think Jose Nazario is going to be talking in great detail about libdnet tomorrow. And libpcap?
Sunday.
Oh, Sunday, you're right, Sunday. So Sunday morning. So you will hear a lot of detail about that. I won't go into that much detail about, you know, libdnet, but I will talk about how Morph uses it. Okay, so here we get to the high-level architecture for Morph. And we're going to do the architecture diagrams and drill down bit by bit so that we can see, you know, exactly what's the internals of Morph. So this is just the first level diagram. And you can see here that a remote host somewhere sends a packet over to the machine. But on the way over, Packet Purgatory, you know, intercepts it and then passes it on to Morph, which then might do a direct response to the remote OS, or it might not. It might pass it on to the OS. And you can see the relationship from this high-level diagram. Now, what exactly is Morph doing when it gets a packet? Morph is composed of three different components. There's an inbound handler, there's a state table, and there's an outbound handler. The inbound handler is the first spot, the first component that receives the packet from the remote host. So the inbound handler has the job of deciding whether it's going to respond directly to that packet or it's going to pass it along to the OS. And as you'll see later, that decision depends on what type of packet is received, obviously. The state table is very important because if there's a connection, let's say, you know, let's say we receive a SYNACK packet. How do we know if that SYNACK packet is a result of a SYN that we just sent out to another remote host and they're responding to that, or if it's, you know, a tool like Nmap, which just sends a single, you know, SYNAPT case and sees how we respond to that. So it's not really part of a legitimate connection. So the state table helps with stuff like that. I mean, you can store information. And I should mention the state table is actually a hash table, which has four different values in it, which is IP address, destination, IP address source, port, the source, and the destination port. So those four pieces of information are stored in the state table. And the host OS is obviously involved in the loop somewhere. But a lot of what we're trying to do is outbound, you know, will prevent the host OS from directly sending a response to the remote host, because if we're trying to pretend to be something else, we don't want our underlying real OS to actually do the response. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about packet purgatory and how it applies to Morph. Packet purgatory is not a kernel module. It is a user land program, which is written based on libpcap and libdnet. So whatever libdnet will support for firewalls, that's what packet purgatory will support. So there's a lot of dependency there. And I know that Todd has talked to Doug Song before about, oh, can you, you know, add support for this in there, you know, whatever. So anyway, packet purgatory, as you'll see in the next few slides when I go into more detail, has two different modes. It has a proxy mode, and it has a loopback firewall mode. Let me show you how the proxy mode works. Let's say a remote host sends a packet in, okay? So there's a proxy IP that gets used, which is an IP address. It has to be an IP address in the subnet that's not being occupied by another host. So it's kind of a fake IP address. So you do that fake IP address, that intercepts the packet, and of course libpcap is sniffing on that interface. So libpcap intercepts that packet along the way to inbound handler for Morph. And when it gets to inbound, inbound decides, okay, am I going to respond or am I going to pass this on? And let's say it passes it on, passes the packet on to the OS kernel. The thing about Morph is I don't want to do all of the work of replying to the packet for Morph by itself. It's easier to have the underlying kernel do some of the work of replying, you know, however it's going to reply, depending on what the real OS of it is, and then pass it along to outbound handler, which will rewrite that packet to reflect our emulated OS. So that way, the kernel is doing some of the work, so I don't have to do so much work with Morph. So libdnet writes raw IP before passing the host, passing the packet to the host OS. And by the way, the packet's going to change once the host OS receives it and writes it however they see fit. And then they're going to send the packet along to the proxy IP, which is then going to pass it to outbound via pcap, libpcap sniffing at that interface. And then finally, when outbound rewrites that packet, then via libdnet's raw IP write, it will get sent back to the remote host. Now, the other mode here is the loopback firewall mode. I didn't mention this yet, but there are certain firewalls that are supported by libdnet, as you know. And those are Linux IP chains and BSD's IPFPF, those firewalls. Now, if you're running like a Windows firewall or like Mac OS X firewall or something like that, that's not supported. So since it's not supported, you have to use the proxy mode of Morph. You can't just use the loopback firewall mode, because that OS firewall there in the middle of the diagram implies that that's the firewall that libdnet supports. that's on your host. So this is your choice if you have a firewall that is supported in the other part. It's your choice if you don't. Okay, so remote host sends packet. Packet gets blocked by the firewall on the host from going directly to the host kernel. And libpcap is sniffing, as usual, and passes that packet along to the inbound handler, which then, let's say it decides to pass the packet to the outbound OS, and then it does the same kind of thing that it did in the last diagram, except this time you do a libd.raw ip write, and then that gets sent to a loopback interface, which sends the packet to the host OS, which rewrites the packet according to what the underlying OS is, sends it via the loopback back out, and then libpcap takes that packet and passes it to outbound, which rewrites the packet to reflect what OS we want to be. Okay, and then that packet gets sent to the remote OS. So that's in detail how Morph uses packet purgatory and libdnet and libpcap to do things. Okay, there are certain OS scanners that I wanted to start with and certain ones that I wanted to have more experience with the first ones before I went over and tried to fool them. But I started with Queso because I thought it was, you know, it's the oldest OS scanner. It's what Mmap is. I guess Mmap kind of used the Queso signatures as its first OS scanning techniques. And then there's XProbe 2, which is written by Ofer Arkin, which is novel because it uses ICMP packets to elicit response. Now, there's the passive OS fingerprinting tool, which I'm still working on. I think the thing about the passive OS fingerprinting tool is that, well, it's not trying to solicit for a response from the host OS. It's just sitting on the network and listening to how the host OS is talking. So with a tool like POF, the way to defeat that is to just be really good about acting like the emulated OS that you want to be. So I figured with POF, if I could fool Mmap and Queso and XProbe 2 well enough, then I'd be able to fool POF as well. And then there's the Ring Snack Time tools, which are talking about a timing analysis of the packets, meaning that they send a SYN out to your host. Your host sends a SYNACK back. They take that SYNACK and they drop it. And your host resends a SYNACK and resends another SYNACK because they keep dropping them. And meanwhile, they're looking at your timing between your retransmits for your SYNACK and matching that up to, oh, this OS uses, you know, this much time to retransmit. That one uses that much time. So it's, I think that's the newest fingerprinting technique of the three different kinds. It's also going to be difficult to deal with from a Morph standpoint because, you know, I don't really know exactly how I'm going to do that yet. But I think I can figure it out, and it would take care of it because, yeah.
Where does that time variance come from?
Where does the time variance come from?
Yeah, as far as the time between the retransmits of the
SYN. I think it comes from, like, the TCP, the stack implementation. Every OS does it differently. I mean, some might take this much time. The thing is, what is this? RFC 789 is the one that defines how TCP stack implementation should be done. It doesn't define every single detail of how it has to be done, so a lot of it is kind of left open for vendor interpretation. And so we have issues like, you know, window size is different for every OS, and retransmit times is different for every OS. So these fingerprint scanners are using that information to derive the difference between one OS to another. Before I go on, I think it's worth mentioning some other tools that have in the past tried to defeat OS fingerprinting tools. There is FPF, and that's by the guys from Packet Knights. I looked at it. A lot of people have said that it's not very stable code. It crashes a lot, and it's also tied to the kernel. It's a loadable kernel module for Linux. And I think later on, they rewrote it to be an LKM for OpenBSD. I'm not sure. I think it was OpenBSD. But still, they're very tied to the kernel, and I really didn't want that for Morph because I want everyone to be able to run Morph. So I want portability, which means I can't have Morph be a kernel module or something. There's IP personality, which I like because it emulates different OSs. So if you want to be somebody else, IP personality will let you do that. The problem is, it's a patch for a kernel. So again, it's not portable. So I did not find any tools out there that are both portable and let you emulate the OS you want to be. So I think Morph is, that's where I got the idea for Morph. I'm like, oh, okay, there's an area that we could fill, you know. I talked a little bit about this a couple slides ago, but there are three different types of OS fingerprinting techniques. Active, passive, and timing analysis. And it's a good thing that all of those can be defeated in some way with a tool like Morph. And the reason why that is because, you know, I own the machine that's running Morph. So if I own the machine, then I should have the ultimate control over defending it, right? I mean, I should be able to tell it to say whatever I want it to say so that other people would believe what I'm saying. Okay, let's talk about Queso. Queso sends 7 different types of TCP packets to open ports. And it really is the first tool that came out to do something like this. So it's old. The funny thing is, when I was looking at the Queso fingerprints, I think they only went up to like Linux 2.1 kernel for their signatures, and they didn't have anything else beyond that, and I was just kind of like, we're up to 2.6 now, you know? So I don't think that they've done a lot of maintenance work on updating all this stuff, but, you know, they were the first to come up with this, and Nmap uses this as inspiration for some of its techniques, so I admire them for doing this. Now, I don't know if you could see this very well in the back. I hope so. But this is a table that outlines how Morph responds to certain types of situations, like all 7 different types of packets that Queso will send. I'm not going to go through this whole table and tell you this is what, okay, because I think that's going to be really boring. But I'd like to point out a couple of really interesting cases that I've seen. I think it's worth mentioning just once how Morph handles SYN connections. So when the remote host sends in a SYN packet to Morph, Morph says, is this destined for an open port or a closed port? If the packet is destined for an open port, then Morph said, oh, okay, well, my work is done for now. Like the inbound handler says, my work is done for now, and records that new SYN connection in the state table because you have to maintain the state so that you know later on that this is part of the same connection, and passes that packet along to the OS. And you saw earlier in the diagrams how the OS handles the packet and sends it back to outbound, which then rewrites it. So that's what happens for a SYN connection. Now for SYN-ACK, I think I mentioned this earlier as well, but you get a packet, it's a SYN-ACK packet, and you go, well, is this part of a legitimate connection because I tried to talk to someone else earlier with a sin? Or is this just some OS finger pointing tool, like trying to, you know, screw around here? So you say, okay, sin act, look at the state table. You know, you go, okay, okay, that's part of a connection that already exists. So I'm going to respond to it accordingly. Now for a fin packet, that's very interesting too, because like I mentioned earlier, TCP stack implementations are not consistent across all OSs. I would love for it to be. If it were, I don't think tools like Nmap and stuff would be so effective. But you know how vendors are. So with the fin packet, certain OSs like Windows will respond to those with a reset or something. And then other OSs like OpenBSD or Linux or something may not bother responding to it at all. You know, so that's just how things are with responses. So in this case, we just pass the packet to the OS, or if we're trying to be like Windows or something, we're trying to emulate Windows, although I don't know why anybody would want to emulate Windows. But anyway, I don't know, maybe you're running a honeypot or something, I don't know. But if you're Windows or something, then you just directly respond to that packet. Handle it right then. Now the sin plus XXX plus YYY, that's just unused flags. You know, unused flags being like ECN or something like that. So it's some really strange packet. Well, the way we want to handle that is kind of similar to how we handle it for sin packet. So we want to either, depending on like the OS, either we're just going to respond or, you know, something like that. And if we don't respond right away, it's because certain other implementations will actually want to reply to that. So then we pass it along, and then it gets written by outbound back out. Now, XProbe 2, I didn't find the test cases in XProbe 2 to be that interesting. The thing about XProbe 2 that makes it unique is that it's the first tool to use ICMP packets to elicit responses. And it's also a tool that uses fuzzy fingerprinting techniques, meaning that the signatures don't have to match exactly. It does a percentage match. So if it gets a certain type of response, it says, oh, this is about a 70% match for Windows and about like a 55% match for something else. And so based on that kind of fuzzy logic, that's how it matches for OS. That's the novel thing about XProbe. I found one thing very interesting. It sends a certain packet, ICMP information request packet, which I was like, how am I going to handle this? So I looked this up in Richard Stevens, TCP IP Volume 2, and I said, huh, Richard Stevens says it's obsolete. Nobody uses it. I'm like, well, who the heck uses it then? Why is he even bothering with this packet? So then I looked at the fingerprint file, and there were like a couple people who use it. AIX is one of them. And I was like, AIX? Oh, okay. Yeah, they need to modernize here or something. And clearly, I guess that's why he put a case like that in there, is because he's like, how do I figure out if it's AIX or Solaris? Oh, okay, I'm just going to do it that way. That's pretty clever. And I could tell then that he has spent a lot of time looking around for stuff like this. But like I said, XProbe 2's cases are not horribly interesting. For all the ICMP information, we're just going to have inbound reply. I mean, no need to send it through the OS and have it go through outbound. Now, the UDP is just like, you know, if the port is open, then we'll pass it along. If the port is closed, we'll just reply directly. And actually, you might be wondering how I figure out if the port is open or closed. I got that kind of from LSOF. I looked at LSOF's function. I think it's LSOF-I will tell you like which ports are open and which ports are closed. And so I looked at the source code for that to get the idea of how I was going to write morph to determine whether ports are open or closed. So that's going to be very important because certain fingerprint tools look for open ports only and certain ones look for closed. And Nmap actually looked for both. The SYNAC we already talked about earlier for KSO, so I mean this isn't really horribly interesting. Nmap. Okay, I did Nmap last because, well, for this iteration, because I was like, oh my goodness, look at all these test cases, first of all. There was like 9 different test cases, and about 5 of them are destined for open ports, and 4 of them are destined for closed ports. When you run Nmap, do you ever notice it says, you know, TCP host prediction will be less reliable, something like that? What that means is that, you know, maybe you had no open ports on the remote host. So in that case, Nmap couldn't run half of its test cases. That's why it's telling you that the prediction will be less reliable. But anyway, Nmap was, I found, challenging for a few reasons. I'm sure there will be more than a few reasons, but I'm just going to bring up a few. One is that it uses like TCP options on every packet. And I'm just like, wow, I didn't like realize there were so many options, okay? And then, so I'm looking through this and going, how does Windows do this? Well, how do I go find the information about what Windows is doing? I mean, how do you find any information about what Windows is doing? They don't document anything. So I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, I have to run TCP dump, and I have to like scan the Windows box, look at the, you know, hex dump, figure it out. It was just such a headache. I mean, I was just like, oh man, I don't like doing this. But Nmap has a lot of test cases, and that made it harder for me. And, you know, I'm just going to mention right now, it's so much easier to write a tool to attack something than to defend something. Because if you want to attack something, you just have to find one thing to attack. If you want to defend something, you have to think of every possible case that someone could use to attack you. So this was a big challenge. Anyway, you can see that this table is a lot more complex than the other two tables that you've seen. And on the left side, you see that like the top part of the cases is open port oriented, and the bottom part is a closed port. Now, there are some interesting cases in Nmap testing, and I will mention them. For example, TCP sequence test, that's just, they send a SYN and then see like how you deal with like sequence number incrementation. So OS, you know, TCP stacks would do it differently. There's the null packet, which is basically it's a TCP packet with no flag set. And you know, I think most OSs just pretty much drop that. So I just have inbound reply to that. No need to pass it through. The SYN fin urge push. At first I thought, okay, who's going to respond to this? This is kind of odd. But it turns out that like OpenBSD will treat it like kind of a SYN connection. And Linux also will too. So I was kind of like, oh, okay, interesting. I guess I have to handle it, you know, that way then. So that's why in that one is, that's why it says if OS accepts this kind of packet, then pass it to the OS. Otherwise, just have inbound reply directly to it. What else? Okay, the closed port ones obviously aren't very interesting. I mean, if it's closed port, just respond to it directly from inbound. Okay, now, how are we going to fool the other OS scanners? I was saying earlier that the passive OS fingerprinting tool, I can't really, I mean, it's not soliciting for a response from me, so I can't really just have inbound respond or outbound pass it along or something. What I have to do is I have to be really, really, really good at acting like who I want to be. And that itself is a challenge. I'm hoping that if I can fool Nmap, KSO, and XProbe 2 and timing analysis tools very well, then the passive OS fingerprinting tool will be also part of that group. But until I actually test it with POP, I'm not going to know for sure. So I can't tell you for sure right now that I can fool it. But I think I have an idea how to do it. How am I going to fool Ring? Well, first of all, I'd just like to mention I couldn't even download Ring or anything. I mean, it's kind of a proof of concept, vaporware kind of thing. I can't find it anywhere. At first, I couldn't even find a white paper talking about it. But other tools like SnackTime have used the techniques that Ring has described in their white paper and also combined that timing analysis technique with passive fingerprinting techniques. So I am going to be looking at SnackTime and trying to fool SnackTime, because I think that if I can fool SnackTime and they say that, you know, they use the same timing analysis techniques that Ring mentioned, then I should be taking care of Ring pretty well. Okay, this is kind of a surprise slide. And I didn't put this in till today, actually, or last night. But yesterday at CANSEC West, there was a guy who presented on a new OS fingerprinting technique. His name was Greg Talik, or Talik, I'm not sure how to say it. But he talked about new ways of doing OS fingerprinting beyond, you know, what is already done. There was a lot of stuff that he did. I mean, he had probably 9,000 lines of code in his program. And so a buddy of mine who was at CANSEC yesterday called me up last night and said, "Hey, this is what happened at this talk. And you need to go to like these URLs to take a look at what this guy is doing." So that's what I did. And it was actually a very informative read. And I think his tool is called SynScan, that's S-Y-N, scan, and synscan.sourceforge.net is where it is, if you want to take a look at it. But I went over there and I looked at that and I looked at his slides and I said, oh, okay, so what he's doing is he said he only uses like open ports. He only sent a TCP SYN to open port. And he said that's why it's called SYN scan. Anyway, he uses layer 7 information. And what that means is, for example, let's say he sends a SYN to a host that he wants to scan. That host sends a SYN ACK. He sends an ACK. And then what he does is he sends a, you know, get HTTP, you know, type of thing to the host. And the host says, oh, okay, well, here's the information. And he just drops it, right? And then waits to see how long it takes the host to retransmit that information. So it's kind of a build on the Ring technique. It's still timing analysis, but he's doing it a little bit differently by using layer 7 information. So he knows that information. Ooh, what happened to my slides? Anyway, okay, something happened. Okay. Okay, that's good, thank you. Anyway, so he also does other timing analysis things like in Ring, they send a SYN and then you send a SYNAC back, and they just keep dropping those SYNACs, and you keep retransmitting, and they, you know, look at the time difference between each subsequent transmit. And he expands that to be like including things like FINAC, PUSH-APP, you know, other types of packets. And he also does things like measure window behavior under congested conditions. And what that means is you have a certain window size that's allowed on your host. And let's say your window size buffer gets filled up. So he fills that buffer up, and then he says, okay, how long does it take before that congested host sends back a packet saying, I think I dropped some stuff, can you resend it? It's kind of interesting, actually, but he's got like 37 test cases or something. And this guy's been working on SynScan for probably 2 years, and I've been working on Morph for like 2 months. So I'd really like Morph to be a lot better, and I think it needs to be a lot better, and I will make it a lot better. But he's had a big head start, so I don't, you know, I want to defeat that tool, but it'll take me a little time. Now, we were talking about all these fingerprinting techniques and, you know, what kind of bad things can happen to you. Well, how can you avoid being fingerprinted? How can you just, you know, avoid the problem altogether? Well, there's two things that you can do, and one of them, frankly, is very unpractical, right? That is, if we could all just hound the vendors to implement TCP stacks the same way, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. I have a buddy who worked at an ISP, and he was, you know, working on like coming up with a IETF draft for router security. He said, getting Cisco and Juniper and stuff in the same room. First of all, in the same room. Second, to agree on anything. It's just like, you know, taking a mallet and hitting yourself on the head over and over again. So I don't think this first case is going to happen anytime soon. The second case is where if you're in an environment where you're an admin for like lots of machines and you don't want to be fingerprinted, maybe what you can do is you can put your critical servers behind a proxy. So that way, if people outside try to scan you, then they'll just be scanning your proxy. I mean, they can't talk directly to your servers. So that way, their information for fingerprints is, you know, it's your proxy. So whatever your proxy is. Well, that's good. And if you're ultra paranoid and you don't even want them to know what OS your proxy server is running, then I guess you could just like install something like Morph when it's production quality on that proxy server. There were a lot of challenges to working on Morph, and I'm sure there will be more when I work on it some more. But for now, these are the most noteworthy ones that I wanted to bring up. There's different window sizes that are allowed on every OS. I mean, for example, Windows, you know, maybe 64K bytes would be their window size allowance. For Linux, it'll be less than that. So what if you're installing Morph on Linux and trying to be Windows? I don't know why you would do that, but let's just take that as an example. So you advertise, because you're Windows, you're advertising that your window size is 64K bytes. But your underlying OS is not able to support window sizes that big. So then when you get the data, of course, it, you know, fills up your buffer. Your underlying OS still is your underlying OS. You're not changing that. You're just pretending to be someone else. So then you have to do something like, you know, cache the additional data into the state table so that as you empty out that buffer, you can read in more data into the buffer. Sounds kind of easy, but I don't think it's going to be very easy to implement. But I'm going to have to do that if I want to be convincing about who I am. Okay, we talked about this several times, but you want to maintain a state of connection. So if you're getting a SYNAC packet, you want to know for sure whether that's legitimate or not. And having to maintain all of those connections, that are ongoing, or, you know, new connections, write them in the state table. And then, you know, reading them off when appropriate to figure out whether you're part of a legitimate connection or not, that's kind of a headache. The third one, acting like the OS we want to emulate, that goes into fooling tools like the passive OS fingerprinter type of stuff. So that's difficult to do very, very well. I think I mentioned this one earlier as well, but there's standard implementations that are not, you know, like Windows. I can't find any written information about like how Windows is, you know, the stack is implemented. That's difficult. So I have to rely on doing testing in my networks, just running TCP dump and running the scanner and seeing what the hex dump is and going through that hex dump and picking out the information for the header fields. It's very annoying. Okay, so what if, you know, Morph was a perfect tool and it worked perfectly? Well, that's great, except for a couple of things. One is, let's say somebody runs Nmap against your machine. If they just do like, you know, they just want to know your OS, well, that's all well and good. You fooled them. But they do port scans, and they see that you've got port, you know, 137 and 139, not BIOS open. And they go, but you said you were Linux. But Linux doesn't run that BIOS, you know. So I know exactly what you are. You're Windows pretending to be Linux. You know, so that's a barrier. I mean, you can't, like, you know, you can fool them on one level, but you can't fool them on that level. And so that's why I brought up Polymorph. I think a natural evolution to Morph, when I get Morph much better and much more right, is to do an application scanning fooling type of tool, which I will call Polymorph. And that's not going to be easy to do, I can tell you right off. But I think that would be a start of a way to defeat something like that. Okay, and then last of all, so even if you're, you know, running Windows and you're pretending you're OpenBSD or whatever, there are certain automated attacks out there like the Nimda worm that don't give a care who you are at all. I mean, they will knock on everyone's door. And if they can get that far, they just come over and knock on your door. They don't even ask you who you are first. And your Windows, and you're vulnerable to Nimda, I don't think Morph is going to help you at all. I mean, that's too bad. You know, that's something that you just, if that bothered you that much, then use another OS or something. But I just wanted to make sure I brought these up so that, you know, Morph is not something that would protect you 100% or anything. It's just another layer that you can use. There's a lot of work still to be done for Morph. First of all, I don't support emulation of more than like three OSs right now. And if I really want Morph to be really good, I'm going to have to emulate more OSs. Morph currently does not configure and install on Windows. It's not good. I want it to be, the reason why I wanted to make it portable in the first place is so I could install it on Windows or on Linux or whatever without a lot of trouble. So I need to do that. I need to add support for compilation and installation on Windows. I need to work on fooling other OS scanners, and I could include SynScan to that list now after yesterday's talk. Polymorph, I mentioned, that would be nice. Nmap recently implemented an application scanning function, so it would be nice to, you know, go against that. And I think this is kind of low on my list, but GUI support for Morph, I think it's far more important to get it to compile and install on Windows than that. Okay, there are people who helped me out with this project. Todd McDermott wrote Packet Purgatory, without which I would have to write so much more C code. Bill Nugent gave me a lot of good pointers on the slides. Don Bailey also gave me some pointers. And Dan was the guy who called me yesterday from CanSec West and said, hey, you need to take a look at this. This is a new technique. And Dave Dandar shares an office with me, and we sit there, we talk about this tool. So it was really good having him as a sounding board. And I had originally wanted to do a demo of Morph. It's actually, believe it or not, ready for demo state. The problem is when I was testing out the demo, it was at home on a home machine. And on this laptop, I didn't have Nmap installed yet. So I was installing Nmap, and it would not compile on Mac OS X. So I had to download it off of Mac OS X security site. And the version of Nmap that they have there is not 3.5. It was like 2.5 or something like that. And so when I installed that and tried to run it against Morph, fingerprints were all wrong. So so I couldn't like really just demo it. But the source code would be available for download in about a week and a half. I want to do the autoconf stuff for it so that it's all nice and packaged. But is there any questions?
Yeah, you mentioned getting everybody to comply with the standard, which will never happen. But what about just having a standard that Morph installs with, so that unless you deliberately change it, you know, everybody who runs Morph will look like Windows 3.1, for instance. Would that, do you think that would help frustrate fingerprinters? To encourage everybody to look the same?
Yeah, I think that might help. I hadn't really thought about that. That's a good suggestion. But yes, I think that might help. Any other questions?
By chance, have you looked at any OS identification against systems running on like Virtual PC or Soft PC or VMware to see if the virtual OS actually fingerprints differently since it's going through shim? Because a lot of those, there's actually a shim where it gets the original OS and it gets shimmed up to the virtual OS. I was curious about that.
You mean install Morph on the virtual OS?
I was thinking more about just from the fingerprinting point of view, if the original OS seeps through in some way.
Oh, okay. No, I haven't actually tested that. Has anyone in here tested that? Okay, but that's another thought. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, thank you.